Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hockey fans. Welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning, afternoon, wherever you may be. It might even be evening. Some of our friends out in the UK and the Nordic states that tune into the show weekly. We appreciate you guys as always. We got a good show for everybody today. It's almost time to get into the trade talk, rumor, speculation surrounding pre-agency and draft day. And we have very special guest Lyle Richardson from Spectors Hockey, always on top of the latest trade rumors. He's joining us as in our featured guest segment in the second part of the show. First thing we're going to do, we'll go down the Vegas lane and we're going to look at the Vegas Golden Knights 2019 NHL draft, how many picks they have and who we think might be available there at the first pick. Chris, good day to you, sir.
Hey, what are you doing there, buddy? Yeah, so the Knights, they have their own picks in rounds 1, 2, and 3. Round 1 is 17th overall, which is going to get a good player there. And then they have Nashville and Winnipeg's pick in round 3. So the second half of round 3, they have they'll have 3 picks pretty close together. Their own Nashville,
yeah, they will.
And Winnipeg. And so interesting to note, I thought a good topic to discuss regarding the draft is this kid, Spencer Knight. Now, Spencer Knight is the only goalie with a first-round grade. The people who really like him a lot, or I should say his ceiling is one of a franchise goalie, if you will. It takes a pretty high ceiling for a goalie to get a first-round grade, from what I can remember.
Yeah.
In fact, the next goalie rated in the draft, I think, is like a late second-round grade. So there's a big difference between Knight and the next guy on the list. And, you know, reading up for our big draft show, mock draft show on June 15th with Mark Scheig and Dan Harrington joining in the fun. Knight is a guy that could go anywhere from the middle of the first round to the end of the first round. So there's a really strong chance that when George McPhee, Kelly McCrimmon are on the clock at 17, Spencer Knight is going to be on the board. And for me, you have Marc-Andre Fleury signed for the next 3 years. It seems like the perfect – well, I shouldn't say the perfect guy. It really comes down to how they evaluate him, right? But if they have him higher on their board – to take Knight, have their goalie of the future in the system, 3 years of development. By the time Fleury is going to be at that point, what, 37, 38, give or take, somewhere in that range? Do I have that right? He'll be at the end of that contract. You know, it could be kind of the handoff for Knight. And that's a name I'd like to get your thoughts on it. Another guy to keep in mind, and it will be a familiar name, and let me get his first name. I know his second name, and, of course, I can't find it. And that is
Wait.
Suzuki, not Nick Suzuki, who the Knights drafted, 12th or 13th overall in their first draft, but his brother Ryan. So that's another guy who's a possibility for Vegas at 17. But, what do you think about Spencer Knight?
I think, and I was just looking through, pulling up the order, trying to find out if Winnipeg and Nashville slots are put into the first round yet. I hadn't found it, but I came up across a Bleacher Report mock draft that showed Spencer Knight going to the Vegas Golden Knights, oddly enough. Excuse me. Look, 6'3", 200 pounds. He just now turned 18. I mean, he could top out 6'4", 6'4.5", 215 pounds, prototype size, ready to go to Boston College. You know, a hockey factory that Boston College is. highest ranked North American goaltender from the NHL scouting combine, but the NHL scouting bureau. The pipeline in goaltenders, you do have Danskin legacy. I don't know if there's a belief, and I guess we'll find out soon if Malcolm Subban gets re-upped here in the free agency cap crunch that the Knights are facing, what their belief level is in him. But they have young Dylan Ferguson in the pipeline. I don't know if the organization believes that they have the heir apparent to Marc-Andre Fleury, as like you said, four years down the line. Spencer Knight looks, if he's on the board, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he's a Golden Knight. I don't see that you have serviceable goaltenders, maybe as Danskin legacy. If they don't re-up Subban, we'll see the writing on the wall there, and one of those two guys will most likely move into the backup slot next season. But I don't know if their ceilings are you know, believed in, if you will, to be the guy who's going to carry the franchise for the next 10, 15 years. Whereas a Spencer Knight, if he pans out and his under 18 international play, very good, two silvers and a bronze. So, you know, right there. I think that would be the pick. I think your pipeline at center, including who you have on your NHL roster and Cody Glass, solid. You have good pipeline on the wings, and your wingers are all young. They're going to be around for, you know, with the exception of Pacioretty, but then you think, okay, can Gusev move up to the second line in 3 or 4 years if Gusev is the decision at third line? So I don't think you need to go winger at that spot, and I think their defensive depth is good in the pipeline. When you look at Whitecloud, Haig, some of the other guys they have in Chicago, I think goalie's the way to go with that pick. If you have a chance to take the highest ranked goalie in the draft, I think that's a good call by you, Chris. I think you do take Spencer Knight number 17 overall.
Yeah, I mean, again, it also comes down to how they, you know, obviously they are scout every team, their scouting staff, and you know, at the end of the day, if for whatever reason Vegas. You know, the team picking at 16 or 18, whatnot. Like, let's just say Ryan Suzuki, and they love him to death, and they're higher on him than most other people, then you take the guy that's highest on your board. I mean, that's the rule of thumb. But all things being somewhat equal, this seems to be right around the spot he would go. He has a high ceiling. You know, goalies take time, so, and you don't have to rush him, obviously, with Fleury signed for the next 3 years. And I think Fleury, as long as he stays healthy, is a pretty safe bet to be a top-notch strong goaltender. So it gives you plenty of time to develop him. It seems like a really great fit all the way around.
Yeah, it does.
Now, I guess the only danger – I don't think there's a huge danger in looking at the teams at 13, 14, 15, 16 taking him. But the only danger is, you know, someone else, if we're smart enough to figure out this is a strong consideration for Vegas, then it, if someone's picking whatever, 22, 24, whatnot, and says
moving
to themselves,
up.
Yeah, I like, let's say you're LA Kings, who I think have the 22nd overall pick. So someone like that trying to move up to 15 or 16, give up a pick, and if they love Spencer Knight, to me that would be probably the bigger danger if Knight's not winds up not being on the board, a move like that. But I got a feeling this is a McPhee move. Remember a couple of years ago when McPhee was one of his last drafts in Washington, he took the Russian goalie Samsonov around 2021 overall, and he's one of the better prospects in the sport. So, yeah, I would be, if I was a betting man, I would say there's a better chance than not that Spencer Knight will be the Knights' pick at 17.
The other reason I like the pick is because the Vegas Golden Knights goaltender coach has been, you know, somewhat of a goalie whisperer, if you will, if you remember last year when Fleury went down and missed all that time with his concussion. Dave Pryor worked with Dansk and Legace and Subban. And remember, Subban was a throwaway from Boston. Just bye-bye, you're on waivers, get out of here. And, you know, turned him into a serviceable backup goaltender from the rubbish heap in Boston. I believe he was a first-round pick by Boston. I think 2 years removed to go ahead and put your first-round pick on waivers, that tells you what Boston thought of the player. And so Dave Pryor, to get a guy with size, speed, athleticism, all the tools to, you know, put his ceiling at being a franchise goaltender in the NHL Scouting Bureau notes, then you turn him over to Dave Pryor for rookie camps and camps for the next 3 years. It just seems to be like a perfect fit. Like you said, there's some teams, you know, New York might, depending on what their Russian prospect does, might want to trade up for the heir apparent to Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah,
the Kings sitting there.
The Rangers. No, the Rangers. Yeah, the Rangers and the Islanders have both the guys in their pipeline, and I don't think they want to give up the ammunition to move up, especially in the Islander case. They don't have a third or fourth round pick, you know, to move up even just a few spots in the first round.
You got to sweeten it.
It's going to probably cost you. Yeah, it's going to cost you probably a two, and if not a two, then, you know, a couple of threes kind of thing. And in the Islander case, they don't have a three and they don't have a four. And so if they were to trade their two, then basically the first half of the draft, which, you know, the second half of the draft, you could find players, obviously, but let's be honest, it's not easy. I mean, I look at it that if every draft that you could find one player in rounds 5 through 7, like a good player, everyone would sign off for that.
For sure.
So, you know, you want to hit on your first round pick, have it be a good player, and then rounds 2, 3, and 4, I think you want to hit at least on two of those rounds, and then in the late rounds.
If you get
5, 6, 1,
you're kind of fortunate.
So every draft, right, every draft, if you could be adding, no, we're not talking about superstars here, but, you know, for the most part, adding 4 players to the mix every year from your draft if possible. But, I got a feeling like you said, Bleacher Report had him at taking Spencer Knight. He's going to go in that. I don't think he's going to last I could see the Kings taking him too at 22, because that's the pick they got for Muzzin. If he's still on the board there, I don't think he goes past
that at all.
I don't think he goes past the Kings.
Ottawa might.
Yeah, they got a young goaltender that they like from Pittsburgh in one of the trades they made with them. I forget which one. I want to say his name is Gustafson off the top of my head. Yeah, that's and they only have one first round pick, so that'd be I would think that your boy Rob Blake would be very happy to take Spencer Knight with his second first round pick.
The other thing you can think about too, Chris, is if Cody Glass is tearing up the playoffs in the AHL right now, if in their cap cleansing of the roster in order to sign William Karlsson, the Golden Knights decide that Cody Glass is going to be ready to play third line center next year, then as part of a package, say they want to move up to 13 or 12 to make sure, you know, Arizona would always be in the market. If you could move up to Minnesota spot or Florida spot and package a Cody Eakin or an Eric Halla, you're killing two birds with one stone on draft day. You're shedding salary and you're moving up the draft and you're getting the goaltender that you like.
That's a good point.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Or if there's a player in the top 12 or 13 that they
that
like.
That you really like. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I would totally think, and I saw something this week that McPhee is going to run the that he's going to be running things through the draft as general manager. So
yes,
McCrimmon's duties don't kick in until like the calendar, the season next year. So I won't be surprised if next, you know, the top six will be set because they're going to sign Carlson. If they start the season next year with a Gusev, Glass, Tuck third line, that'll mean Hall is gone. That'll mean Eakin's gone, and probably Miller's gone. So we're going to see some of these young guns come up for the Golden Knights and take those roster spots. And since our good buddy Lyle Richardson is joining us from at Spectres Hockey on Twitter, spectreshockey.com, we can go right ahead and ask him, who are the favorites for the Golden Knights in their salary cap cleansing that you're hearing are going to be on the move this summer? Lyle, are you there?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going really good. It's going really good. We were just talking about possible Vegas Golden Knights that would be on the move coming up this summer. And Cody Glass is currently tearing up the AHL playoffs. Is it possible? Now, you know, Eakin has the 3.85 hit, but Eric Hall, in my mind, has been the guy that would come in at the, $2.2 million cap hit and play that third line center in order to make enough salary cap space available for Carlson and to fill out the rest of the roster, frankly. Eakin and Halla, if the organization believes that Cody Glass can come into the NHL next year and play third line center, which he might be proving right now that he's able to do, we could see a Gusev, Glass, Tuck third line backing up those first two lines. That's going to make Vegas a pretty dangerous squad if that's the route they decide to go. No?
Well, if Glass, as you said, if he turns out to be, all that you think he can be, you almost sound like an army ad. I think that's what that used to be back in the day.
Be all you can be.
Yeah. my apologies to the U.S. Army for stealing their slogan. If Cody Glass can prove himself at the NHL level, I mean, that's a possibility. But, of course, tearing it up in junior is one thing. Being able to translate that into the NHL, I mean, that's another. It could take him some time. But, there's no question they're going to have to. They're going to have to shed some salary, both to make room for William Carlson and, as you said, perhaps to make room for Cody Glass and, as you said, fill out the rest of the roster. And you mentioned Cody Eakin. He's come up more than once in trade speculation. Of course, he's making over $3.8 million a season. Well, I think just for I think he's got one season left on his contract now, but still $3.8 million. Ryan Reeves, they could move him out as well. He's close to $3 million. I think between $2.5 million and $3 million. He's got a year left, I think, too. So that's a guy that could be on the move as well to free up. But we're also hearing that Colin Miller, that he could end up getting shopped. And I think of the three, he might be the most desirable trade chip that they'd have of those three if they're going to move them. I think he's, 26 or 27? I believe he's a right-hand defenseman. He moves the puck well. Yeah. And he's making, I think, around $3.8 to $4 million a season, something in there, and he's got, I think, 3 years left on his contract. So, that type of defenseman at that age, and, of course, we all know right-shot defensemen are very popular around the NHL right now. So, Miller, Eakin, and maybe Ryan Reeves could be on the move. Maybe two of them, depending on how much cap room you need to free up.
Would it make sense in your mind for – because you're going to have David Clarkson's money off the books next season.
Yep.
And William Carlson is arbitration eligible this time around. Does it make sense to just go ahead and do the arbitration, lock him up for this year, and have that money available next year to lock him up for the next 8 years at a higher number if you can't get a long-term deal done this season?
Well, I mean, you can go that route. I think it's preferable to avoid that because arbitration, as we know, I mean, that can be rather bruising to the ego if you're a player to have to sit in there and listen to a team basically list all the reasons why they don't think you're worth what you're seeking. I think that that's something that the Golden Knights would prefer to avoid. One thing I would also wonder as well, if they might perhaps look at packaging Clarkson's rights to a team, say like the Ottawa Senators, that needs to reach the cap floor. That way you're not having to wait till the start of the season to put him on long-term injured reserve. That frees it up automatically, and, you know, maybe you could convince him to take, you know, to accept maybe $6 million a season if you've cleared 5.2 off your books right off the bat. So
yeah, the one problem with that, and Chris points this out too, is that he still holds a no movement clause, and Vegas has no state tax.
I don't think that's an issue. I don't believe that is an issue anymore. He held that no movement clause with his previous clubs too. That was not an issue, and it won't be now.
Okay.
He's getting paid. So yeah, I'm sure if they call him and say, "Yeah, we're going to ship your rights to Ottawa," he will have no problem with that. So.
All right. Well, let's get into some of the other teams around the league, and notably, the Leafs and Tampa are looking to be in just the same or maybe even worse cap space than the Vegas Golden Knights going into the season. What are you hearing on the Maple Leafs and the Tampa Lightning fronts?
Well, as you can imagine, I mean, there's a lot of conjecture about what they're going to do, because you're right. Both clubs, they've got limited cap space, and they've got significant players to sign. For the Lightning, obviously, Braden Point. For the Leafs, of course, Mitch Marner. So, yeah, they are going to have to shed salary. Of course, we're hearing a lot more about what the Leafs might do than obviously what the Lightning could do, given their respective markets and the type of coverage the Leafs get.
Right.
Yeah, but for the Leafs, obviously, you know, they're going to have to move some salary off the books right away. Because Marner, you know, regardless of what he gets, I mean, I've heard some Leafs fans were kind of wishful thinking that he'll take a hometown discount and get $8 million a season. That's not happening. He could end up getting $11 million. Regardless of what he gets, where they are at right now, whatever he signs, that's going to push them over the cap automatically for next season. If the cap's $83 million, they'll be over. So they got to shed salary right away. So guys like Nazem Kadri, they're getting mentioned. You know, he makes about $4.5 million a season, and given his playoff meltdowns and suspensions, there's you know, you've got pundits saying okay, they can't trust him anymore, and they should move him out. The big issue, too, I mean, guys like Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Johnsson, they're also restricted free agents. But, you know, even if you trade them, right now, I mean, they haven't signed for anything. So you're still stuck with this cap conundrum that you're facing. You know, there's talk of trying to convince Patrick Marleau to waive his no movement clause. You know, there's some Leafs that Leafs fans who seem to think, well, maybe he might accept going back to San Jose. That's making the assumption San Jose wants him back, and they don't. You know,
so right?
They don't. He no longer fits into their game plan. That ship sailed. So unless he's willing to open up to go somewhere else. And at this stage in his career, I know he's only got a year left on his contract, but given how much it costs, what his cap hit is, which is over $6 million, there may not be much of a market unless you're willing to package him with something really good. So,
well, I'll tell you real quick.
Yep.
If Marleau has a referee sweater in his closet, San Jose would take him back in a heartbeat.
Meow, sir. Meow, I thank you. I really don't see Marta going anywhere. So now you're also starting to hear people suggest, well, you know, perhaps they could also move out William Nylander. But given everything they went through last year to get Nylander re-signed, and, you know, Kyle Dubas basically pretty much promising that as long as he's the general manager, Nylander's not going anywhere. I don't see him moving. So I think it's got to be Kadri who goes. And I think they got to look at moving out somebody else who's salaried. I don't know who. Maybe they pull a swerve and maybe they'll pull a swerve and they'll trade Mitch Marner. And believe it or not, that's even been suggested too. I don't think they're serious about doing that either. But really, it's going to be very difficult for them for Kyle Dubas to square that circle. In terms of the Lightning, it'll be a little easier. Braden Point isn't going to make as much as Mitch Marner. Being playing in a state where there's no tax, no state tax, if they offer him $8 million a season, that means that's a full $8 million a season to him. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get Braden Point in for around $8 million, $8.5 million a season. And they'll have to shed a contract, but I've heard guys like Tyler Johnson mentioned, but everybody who keeps mentioning him keeps forgetting he's got a full no trade clause. And I really don't think they're keen to move him. I think the guy who could move is JT Miller. He lacks no trade protection. He's $5.25 million a season. He's not a product of the Lightning system the way Johnson was. I mean, yeah, I know Johnson was a free agent signing out of college, but he still came through their system. Same as like Alex Killorn. Alex Killorn was a draft pick. He's been mentioned as a trade candidate, but again, full no trade, and I really don't think they're keen to move him. Whereas JT Miller, they acquired him in the Ryan McDonough trade. So if there's a guy to move, I think it's him.
That'll certainly help a lot. Let me go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, hey Lyle, good to have you back on the show. So
my pleasure.
Pretty quickly, I should say, after the Dallas Stars got eliminated, you started to see in various places of the possibility of Jamie Benn being on the trade market this offseason, which seemed hard for me to believe. But then when I heard Elliot Freeman talking about it, based on the incident earlier in the year with one of the people in the ownership group, I mean, in your opinion, is this a real thing that Ben could be moved this offseason?
Well, first to Elliot Freeman's point, I mean, I don't think Elliot was really saying that this was going to happen.
Right.
You know, he brought it up sort of in the context of the Stars moving forward, and of course, obviously mentioning Jim Leides, who's the star CEO, giving Ben and Tyler Seguin a blast at midseason for what he considered to be poor performance. But honestly, I don't see that happening for one very simple reason. First of all, three words, no movement clause. It's full. It's ironclad.
You would have to want to go. Yeah.
Exactly. And there is no indication, regardless of what happened with Jim Leides in his comments, there's no indication that Jamie Benn wants out, that he doesn't like it there anymore because, the CEO was mean to me. he's not moving any more than I see Tyler Seguin moving. Same thing, full no movement clause. This guy is your captain. If you're going to ship him out, I think that sends the wrong signal. I mean, he played well for them again in the postseason. I mean, I know that Elliot brought up the fact that, his point production's down. He may be feeling, kind of the effects of years of his physical play. This is a guy who had 10 points in 13 playoff games. You know, it seems that when the playoffs hit, this guy hits a switch and goes into beast mode. You know what I'm saying? He had a bit of a down year. But I really don't think that they're looking at trading him. I mean, he's only a year removed from a 79-point season as I look at his stats right now. This was a down year for him, sure, but there could be a lot of different reasons why. Maybe he's nursing an injury that nobody knows about and that they don't want to make aware. Who knows what the reason is? Maybe there's personal factors in there, whatever. But in terms of performance, in terms of leadership, I don't put any stock into him getting moved. To be quite honest, unless he wants out.
Well, if he was ever available, I bet you that Lou Lamoureux would be very interested in him.
A lot of teams would be very interested in him. Line forms to the left, Lou.
Right. Well, a combination of Ben and Barzal would sound pretty enticing. But segueing that point onto the Islanders, I think this is going to be a pretty fascinating team. Obviously, they got four, I would call them three big free agents, but let's call them four in Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Robin Lehner, Jordan Eberle. But the Islanders are also in a place in terms of a lot of flexibility regarding their salary cap, so they can sign, you know, two or even three of these guys and still have room to make a couple more moves. And they have assets to trade. Lou is willing to trade his first round pick at the trade deadline. They're deep on defense, both on the main roster, in the prospect pipeline, as well as in the AHL. So he's got some chips if he wants to put them in the table. So I think he could be active on the trade front as well. How do you see the Islander off season?
Well, I mean, I think you pretty much covered it. regarding their free agents, I think Anders Lee stays. Listen, they already saw one captain leave a year ago through free agency. I don't think Lou wants a repeat of that. Lee wants to stay. Lamoriello wants to keep it. Money isn't the issue, from what I've heard and read. Money isn't the issue. It's term. He turns 29 in July. And I believe that Lou, now again, none of us really know what Lou's got in mind, but the speculation is that Lamoriello doesn't want to give him more than 5 years. I think Lamoriello's fine with 5 years, but anything beyond that I think kind of makes him nervous. And then justifiably, I mean, once a player hits their mid-30s, performance inevitably declines. So if you sign him for 5 years, that takes him up to age 34. You can revisit then at that point if he's worth keeping on a 2 or 3 year deal after that. But I think he stays. I think they'll get that worked out. Recent speculation, I think it was you mentioned Elliot Friedman earlier, and I believe in his recent 31 Thoughts column, he had mentioned that the Islanders and Nelson are working toward a deal. So I think it looks good that he'll be staying around. Robin Lehner is a Vezina Trophy finalist. The Islanders took a chance on him. They stuck by him when he had the interview there last summer where he admitted he had sought treatment for addictions and for bipolar. He rewarded them with just an impressive season, and I think Lamoriello is going to keep him, and I think Lehner wants to stay. It's going to be costly. I mean, you're not going to get him for $1.5 million a season again. But, if Lamoriello can get him locked up before the award show, that might help his leverage to get him at a more reasonable price. But, I think if you can get him for 5 years, $6 to $6.5 million, because let's face it, he's a Vezina finalist, and he looked impressive. He was arguably, I'd say, the main reason that the Islanders made the playoffs and got as far as they did in the postseason. So, Lou, I think, will be comfortable in paying him what he needs to keep him there. Eberle, I think, is gone. All consensus that I've read and heard is, he won't be back. He's going to be hitting the free agent market. So they can afford to keep three out of the four, obviously. Anyway, well, they can afford all four if they want. But Eberle will be gone. The other three will stay. And as you said, to your point, Lamoriello is going to have a lot of cap space to work with after that. I think he's going to look at trying to bring in Artemi Panarin. Depending on how things go with Lehner, I don't believe he's got interest in Bobrovsky. I think his full court press is going to be on Lehner. But if you can't keep Lehner, well then obviously, I think he'll go hard after Bobrovsky if he's available. And, I do think that he wants to try and bring in another scoring forward to kind of complement Matthew Barzal. You want to have a guy in there that just – I think it was the New York Post, Larry Brooks, put it best. You want to bring in an additional scorer in there to be on Barzal's line so that Barry Trotz can loosen those defensive reins a little bit, because they play a really tight defensive system, as we all know. But, that also resulted in a big drop in their production during the season. I believe they were 19th overall in offense this season compared to being in the top five last season. So if you can bring in another scorer and kind of bring a little more balance to the roster, you'll see Barzal's numbers go up, you'll see Lee's numbers go up, and it'll just make the Islanders a better balanced club that way.
Before I hand off to Mark, I'll give you two quick stats about the Islanders and the desperate need to add scoring. I actually finished, I think, 22nd, but this trend continued in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Lyle, when the Islanders scored at least three goals in the regular season, they went 38-2-2.
Yep.
Now, when they did it in the postseason, they went 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
In the Carolina season, they didn't score three goals in any game. And
yep.
believe it or not, this is a really hard statistic to believe. In the regular season, the Islanders were a 103-point team.
Mm.
But in the 82 games, they scored one goal or were shut out in 21 games. That's a
yeah.
quarter of the season. And
mm-hmm.
so to emphasize of how much of just even getting one premium player offensively and to be able
yeah.
to stick to Trotz's DNA could work wonders for them.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's why, as I said, that just buttresses the point that I've been saying that yeah, they're going to go. I think Lou's going to go after another scoring forward, you know, to boost those stats and just to give them better balance, you know. And I think that definitely came to the fore in the Hurricanes series. Now, against the Hurricanes, I think that long layoff they had didn't help. I mean, their timing
no.
just seemed off so much. And that's it compared to the Penguin series. But, yeah, you've got to have better balance on the scoring line. So, that's why I say, Nelson, Lee, and Lehner stay. Everly goes, and they go shopping via trade or free agency to bring in a scoring forward.
Well, all right, we're talking with Lyle Richardson from Spectres Hockey on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. And you mentioned Panarin and Bobrovsky. And at the trade deadline, Florida, you know, widely publicized, they were clearing cap space because they're going hard after both of them. Realistically, is Florida in the game, I guess you would say, with Panarin and Bobrovsky both, or who would be the favorite in your mind to go to Florida?
Oh, I think it's the Panthers are to quote your president, they're huge favorites. Huge favorite. Huge favorite.
The best of all time.
There you go. They're going to hire the best people. But
yeah.
but honestly, yeah, I don't think it's any secret. The Panthers have been very keen on those two since midseason. They sent out trade feelers back before the deadline, before the Blue Jackets said, no, we're going to keep them as own rentals. They looked seriously into both of these guys. You know, of the two, Bobrovsky is their priority because they aren't going anywhere without an improvement in net. You know, Roberto Luongo, bless his heart, you know, he the will to win and to play is still there, but the body just isn't there anymore. You know, physically he keeps breaking down. He's 40 years old and he's past it. James Reimer, he's proven himself a reasonably decent backup, but he's no starter. I think that myth has been shattered once and for all. And
yeah.
The youngster Montembeau, he has potential, but he's not ready for prime time yet, in my opinion. So they have got to bring in an established starting goaltender, and Bobrovsky, I think, is the guy. If they can't get Bobrovsky, if Robin Lehner's available, I think they'll go hard after him too. But definitely need Bobrovsky. Panarin, I think Panarin is a luxury they don't need. Because they finished 10th in scoring last year. I mean, Jonathan Huberdeau had a fantastic year. Alexander Barkov is, in my opinion, the most underrated two-way forward in the game. He
yeah.
is just fantastic. Yeah. If he played in a bigger market, you know, if he played in a place like Toronto and New York, people wouldn't shut up about him. You know, and justifiably,
yep.
he's that damn good. But they've got Vincent Trocheck. Yes, he was hurt this season, but he had a 70-point season the year before that. You know, Mike Hoffman just came off a 70-point season. They've got promising kids in their system as well. This is a team that had no problem scoring. They couldn't prevent goals, you know. Their defense, they need another top-four defenseman. Yeah, they've got Yandel, they've got Ekblad, they've got Matheson, sure. But after that, the depth just drops significantly. So I would steer away from Panarin and put more of an emphasis on going after a quality defenseman, a top-four defenseman there. If you've got enough room afterwards and you want to go chase after a score, fine. But I'm just saying what I would do in that instance, though. You know, Dale Talon, You know, as we've seen, he has a reputation for making big moves. Some of them you go, ooh, good one. And some of them you go, what the hell was that? So, yeah, but I definitely think, though, yeah, they're the favorites for both of those guys.
Well, sticking with Columbus now, we saw I saw the whole hockey world, and myself included, go from the trade deadline and what the hell is he doing to sweeping Tampa Bay out of the playoffs and going, I want to see more GMs roll the dice like that. And, it was a 180-degree flip. If Panarin and Bobrovsky are gone, it makes sense for them to move them for whatever pick they can get, because they don't have any picks. Their first is in the fourth round, I think, and then they have a seventh. So if you can get a third each for trading both those guys' rights, they're not going back to Columbus. So look for that to happen. And then
I agree.
Now with Kekalainen needs to shift his sights on Matt Duchene. He seemed to be open to staying in a lot of his public comments during the playoffs. Is that a match that you think Kekalainen can finish off a deal and keep Matt Duchene?
Oh, I believe he can keep him, but he's going to have to pay for him. And Duchene's agent is going to, Duchene has the leverage here. Because, look, we know Panarin and Bobrovsky are gone. And like you said, I can see them trading their rights, to interested teams,
Gotta do it.
Florida. Yeah.
Even if you get two-thirds or a third and a
Absolutely.
Fourth or whatever, you gotta do it.
Absolutely, because he cleared out the cupboard to bring in Duchene and Zingel and we also forget about Adam McQuaid and Kevin Kincaid, Keith Kincaid, sorry. But yeah, they gutted a lot of their future this year to make those moves. And, you've got to re-sign Duchene now. You've got to. Otherwise, you risk losing him for nothing, and you got little to show for it. So I think you're going to push, and I think, it's probably going to cost $9 million a season. Maybe a little more, but I think Duchene's agent will put the squeeze on, and it'll be like, Matt wants to stay, $9 million a season for 8 years. Do you do it? I don't think he got much choice now. I think he's gonna have to swallow hard and take that. But if he'll
stay, I think that is the best move, not only probably for the team, because he fits in real well there, but to keep one of those big three and Duchene comes in first line center. I say Kekalainen has got to be off the hook after the playoff run. And then you re-sign Duchene. I say good for you.
Yeah. You're going to have to. And as you said, he was a good fit there. In that regard, they were able to then, they can keep Nick Foligno at left wing, which is where he belongs, because the whole reason why they went after Duchene in the first place is because they had that hole at center. They tried using Nick Foligno in there, but Nick Foligno is not a center. He's just not. Yeah, he's better at left wing.
Yeah.
So they've got no choice. They're going to have to. And if they don't re-sign Duchene, I think the Nashville Predators are going to go hard for him, though they'll have to shed salary first to do it. because they've got limited cap space, but they need, the Predators need another scoring forward, preferably at center. The Montreal Canadiens, I think, will go after Duchene. I mean, the Habs got some promising young centers coming up there. I mean, Kotkaniemi was just, a revelation this year. You got Ryan Poehling, and Nick Suzuki is just, you talk about guys that are tearing it up in junior, Nick Suzuki just had an incredible year in the OHL. I know Habs fans are drooling over these kids, but, I do think, though, that, Marc Bergevin will definitely try to get Duchene if he's available. And there's even talk that, Duchene might even be open to returning to the Ottawa Senators. I know people are incredulous over that, but he's from that area, okay? He trains there in the off season. He's from that area. He likes it there. Now, whether whether the Senators could bring him back or whether that ship has sailed, I personally think that ship has sailed. But, there yet, but it's been mentioned as a thing. So, you know, you can't rule that out. But, yeah, if Duchesne hits the market, there's going to be plenty of teams that are going to line up to get him. So, you know, yeah, I think the Jackets are going to push hard to keep him in the fold.
Okay, Lyle, I got two more for you, and I'll let Mark finish up with one last one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Erik Karlsson. Does he re-sign with the Sharks? And the second part of that question is, if the Sharks were to win the Cup, would that change Karlsson's mentality in terms of re-signing? Would that change anything from a Karlsson point of view of re-signing with them, or from a San Jose point of view in terms of signing him to a long-term deal?
Well, I think that's going to come down to what his asking price is going to be. You know, I don't doubt that he likes it there, and, you know, he's proven to be a terrific fit there when he's healthy, and that's also going to be a factor. That's actually come up now quite a bit since he wound up spending most of the third period on the bench last night in obvious discomfort. Perhaps his groin injuries flared back up again. But, Karlsson... all the talk going into this summer, or going into this season, was that he was going to be 11 or 12 mil a season. And maybe he might still be that if he hits the open market this year. If he is, then forget about it. The Sharks can't afford him at that price. They just can't. Because I think they're going to re-sign, they want to re-sign Pavelski. Wouldn't surprise me if they want to keep Joe Thornton around again for another year. Maybe they could hang on to Gustav Nyquist. They got to re-sign Timo Meier. I mean, he's a restricted free agent, coming off entry level. But, I mean, that kid's going to be due for a raise. Yeah, no question. His handball technique is fantastic, by the way. Just incredible. But anyway. I kid Timo Meier and the Sharks. But anyway.
He got an assist on that, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
He got a nice
assist
there.
What's more embarrassing, the fact that the on-ice officials missed the obvious hand pass, or that they credited him with an assist? And go.
Yeah. Don't start me up now.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Well, here's my thought on Erik Karlsson is that we all thought that he had to wait till the day after the trade deadline, I believe, to sign his max deal because of the CBA.
Yep.
We all thought that was going to be a done deal. And
and
the longer it went on, the longer it went on. To me, it seemed like, A, Erik Karlsson was pulling back, or B, when he did get injured during the regular season, that the Sharks were pulling back. And now he's had a great playoffs.
Yep.
His stock... You know, your biggest availability, or your biggest ability, is your availability to quote Golic and Wingo there. And if he doesn't have that, then I don't think he goes at 11. And the three teams that were super hot and heavy at the trade deadline, Dallas, Tampa, and the Vegas Golden Knights, are out of the running due to the cap. I think
exactly
it's going to be a limited market if he does in fact hit the market. I think he wants to play with a winner.
Yep.
So it's going to be – Erik Karlsson's going to be one of the more interesting players to me to see what happens in the offseason, because we all expected that to be done as soon as possible. And the longer it went on, the more thoughts in my mind that one side or the other was kind of pulling back and let's wait and see what happens in the playoffs in the offseason. So Erik is going to be interesting to see where he ends up, to say the least.
I agree with you. I think I can't disagree with that take at all. It's going to be interesting. I mean, look, he's obviously a high level talent when he's healthy. But you know, as you saw, I mean, he wasn't quite up to speed that last season after he came back from off season surgery. Then he said the groin injuries this year that's limited him. If he's willing to accept, let's say, 8 or 9 mil a season, even on, let's say, another one-year deal, if they sit down and say, look, you know, you've had your injuries and so on and so on, you know, and we know that your value is not going to be as high in the free agent market, you know, this summer as it would have been. If you stick with us for another year or two at the same money you're making now, or maybe a little higher, that'll boost your value higher, and then, you know, maybe you can get that big deal you want. You know, so that's a possibility. But to your point, yeah, I don't think the market is going to be as great for him this summer as it was, as we would have thought it was would have been a year ago. It's because of all the cap issues that you talk about, but also his health issues. If they win the cup, who's to say Doug Wilson doesn't say, thanks, Eric, you know, you did what we wanted.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, thanks very much. Because once you win a cup, your fan base will forgive you any trespasses you make the fall of that during the off season. You know what I mean?
And
if you decide,
and it was worth giving up all the draft picks because you won the cup.
Yep.
So that
you rolled
the dice,
you won. That's what it's all about. And it's like, yeah, your fans will take that and accept 3 or 4 or even 5 years of pain after that, because you got a championship banner you can point to in the rafters and say it was worth it. You know? So yeah, it's you're right. His is going to be much more intriguing than a lot of us thought it was going to be when this whole thing began.
My last one for you, Lyle, and I'll let Mark finish one more after me. And based on, you know, going what we've been talking about, it seems to me, now I preface this because in past years I've said this statement and it's come up as a disappointment, but it seems to me that we could have a very robust trading season in mid-June leading into the draft or right after the draft. We have a number of teams, as we prefaced before, up in a salary cap crunch. We have a number of teams that want to address needs that have flexibility, like such as the Islanders. There's a number of teams out there that want to take that big next step, like Vancouver. There are a number of teams where they have a brand new GM and they want to have a maybe not a whiteboard mentality or something like that, like Ken Holland in Edmonton. And then you have teams like Minnesota who maybe want to try to turn the page on certain things. Do you expect a robust trading season this off season with all those kind of balls in play, if you will?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I mean, I'm like you. I mean, we always tend to think, well, every off season is going to be busy. And summer, last season was last summer was busy, but it kind of also surprised us and I think maybe disappointed us a little bit because we were expecting more moves than what we got. And then we hit the day before training camp and boom, Mark Pacioretty gets traded and boom, Erik Karlsson gets traded. So yeah, you know, we can't give up, as we discover, you can't give up on the off season until, you know, just because you don't see a lot of moves happen you know, in late June and early July. But, yeah, all the factors that you mentioned, I mean, just the number of teams that are going to have limited cap space, that are going to need to shed salary because they got guys to resign. Like you mentioned Vegas, you mentioned Toronto, you mentioned Tampa Bay. Just those three alone, those three teams have to make moves. They have no choice. You know, if Nashville, if they want to get better, they're going to have to make moves, and that's why we've heard P.K. Subban's name come up because
right.
He lacks no trade protection. And, you know, 3 years ago, I didn't expect Subban to get moved. This surprised me because they need scoring punch up front. They had the worst power play in the league, and that's something. Yeah, their power play was the worst. And they didn't get a power play goal in the playoffs either. That's how bad it was. So David Poile said there's going to be changes, and I believe him. And if it's going to be, you know, I got to trade one of my top four defensemen to bring in a scoring forward, Subban, I think, is your best bet. So you got to keep that on the hopper. But, yeah, there's clubs like that and the other issues that you mentioned. I mean, yeah, I think we could see a more, as you put it, a more robust trade market than we've seen in previous summers.
So real quick, Lyle, we got about a couple minutes left. Some big names out there and just your thoughts on Skinner in Buffalo. You touched on Pavelski. I think both sides want to get that done. Myers in Winnipeg and Zuccarello looks like he'll be a real good fit if Dallas can re-sign him. Do those three stay where they're at?
Skinner and Zuccarello stay. Myers, depending on what happens with Jacob Trouba, speaking of guys who could get traded, I think Myers will be gone out of Winnipeg.
I can see him in Florida.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That'd be a good fit.
I'll tell you, if I'm Dale Talon, I'm keeping a close eye on the Winnipeg Jets, on Trouba and on Myers. And if there's an opportunity to grab either one, I go get them. Preferably Trouba. Trouba would be the best one of the two to get, obviously. And Trouba, I think he's – we didn't talk about him earlier, but I think he's a goner, guys. He's – you look at that contentious contract history. He's a year away from unrestricted free agency. He's got arbitration rights again this year. I don't think Shovel Dayoff and company want to go through this ringer again and have that uncertainty.
They'll do well. I'm sorry to interrupt, Lyle. They'll do well in a trade for him too. They'll do well in a trade for him, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're Florida, you've got the depth to offer. You've got depth in young talent and prospects and that you can offer, make a competitive offer for this guy. So that's why I said, if you're Dale Talon, sure, go after Bobrovsky. Panarin, he's a luxury item you don't need. Focus on Trouba. Go get Trouba. If they somehow manage to re-sign Trouba, and they're going to be re-signing Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor, we both know this, then I think Myers is gone. With Skinner and Buffalo, they have no choice. They have to re-sign this guy, and they're going to have to pay him over $9 million a season. Brought him in for a year. He cost you nothing. He really cost them nothing. That was the steal of the summer. And, he's got great chemistry with Jack Eichel. If you don't re-sign that guy, then you're sending the wrong message to Eichel. You're sending the wrong message to the rest of the team. You're sending the wrong message to the fans. You're telling them, sorry, we're just not interested in maintaining a competitive team. And I know that's kind of a broad thing to say, but honestly, if you're not willing to shell out, when you knew damn well, when you acquired that guy a year ago, that you were going to have to pay big to keep him, forget about it.
And let's say this. The fans in Buffalo, fantastic. They've been long – I mean, they won the President's Trophy, I think, 2006, 2007, and tore down the team, basically, after that, and haven't sniffed anything since. It's time to give something back for the fans, and if you need to pay him 10, then you pay him 10. I mean, he's dynamic on that club, and it just I think it just matters whether he wants to spend 8 years in Buffalo or not. Because
he was willing to waive his no movement clause to go to Buffalo. He was excited about playing for them. He reiterated that. And remember, he trains in southern Ontario near Toronto. That's where he's from. So you're only an hour and a half up the road. Right? It's not that far away. So I think if they offer him 9 or 9.5, he takes it. And I think they've got to. They have no choice. And regarding Zuccarello with the Stars, I mean, he was such a terrific fit with them.
I agree.
Dallas, it's in a state that you pay no state tax. If you offer him, now he's going to be 32, if he's not already. I believe he's 32 or he will be this year. If you offer him a 3-year deal for the same money he's making now, which is $4.5 million, I believe, if you offer him that kind of money a year, I think he takes it, because that $4.5 million is more than the $4.5 million that he was making in New York.
Absolutely. Yep. Vegas has that same you got to do the tax math when you're
Why
talking
do you
about
Mark
contracts
Stone
and
was over the moon to re-sign with him. It wasn't just because
100%.
Because he was going to a terrific team and all of that, and he was getting out of that freak show that was the Ottawa Senators. But yeah, knowing that much money was going to be yours, all yours, and not going
absolutely
to attack, you weren't going to kiss 30 or 40% of it away in taxes. Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's a lot of money, and it's a huge consideration. When let's say they traded him to the Kings, and you're in California with the 42% tax bracket when you get over $2 million. That's half of your money to the state. Now you got to pay your federal taxes.
Mm-hmm.
80% of your contract's gone. It's ridiculous.
It's going to be a lot of money gone. So, like I said, that's another reason why players are going to look at Vegas and go, hey. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the team itself, with the great atmosphere, that y'all have there.
Ownership.
And yeah, of course, that's all of it, part and parcel.
Yes.
I mean, the Golden Knights in a very short period of time have already garnered a well-deserved reputation as a class organization. you know, it's a place that players want to come to play. But, you know, the fact that the money is your money and that you're in a, you're in a warm weather climate and all of that, yeah, you know, that factors into it too. Yeah.
It's a perfect storm. I love it. All right, Lyle. Well, thank you so much for joining us and giving us so much of your time this Saturday morning, sir. We always appreciate having you on the show.
Always a pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Everybody go on Twitter at Spectres Hockey for all the updates up to and including the trade deadline and free agency. These guys are all over it, and Lyle's top of the charts in our book.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. You're top of the charts in mine, too.
Thank you, sir. You have a good
thanks,
rest
Lyle.
Of your weekend.
Take care, guys.
All right, Lyle Richardson from Spectres Hockey.
Wow.
I could talk hockey with that dude all day long.
Yeah, I know.
It just goes on and on and on and on,
yeah.
And it's wonderful, all of it. I'm not. Don't get me wrong. We could spend all weekend doing a show with Lyle. That dude's fantastic.
So you want to do a quick thought each on the conference, the East and the West conference finals?
I'll take the East. You told me I couldn't. You told me I couldn't go on a rant today, Chris. So,
all right, that's true. That's true.
Kudos to the Carolina Hurricanes. They got past. You know, they get to the Eastern Conference Final. You know, tough series to get past Washington, and maybe they just left a little too much on the ice in the previous series, and just, you know, their compete level was there, their want to was there. Maybe they just didn't have it in the gas tank to get past Boston, who I think might now be the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Took his plane out of his mind. They showed his numbers the other night. It's 12-5 with a 948 save percentage, I think. Just out of his mind. His numbers really look like Jonathan Quick from 2012. I think right now Boston has to be a favorite, and I'd love to see them play St. Louis in the final.
I'll give you two quickies. In terms of Boston Islanders, round one, play great, get a 10-day layoff. It did no excuses, but you could see it affected them. They lost those first three games by inches. We can go on and on about that. But 10-day layoff, then they get swept. Carolina sweeps the Islanders. They go into the Islanders season pretty much right after the Capitals series, a seven-gamer. Sweep the Islanders, get a week off, and then get bounced by Boston, who basically go from the Columbus series right into the Carolina series.
Yeah.
Now, Boston is in the Cup final.
With 10 days rest.
Is there an official date for game one yet? Have they announced that?
Yeah, let me get it real quick.
Probably,
they did put that out.
I was looking for that yesterday, and I couldn't find it. I figured it was going to be around a week and a half before they play their next game. And granted that they've played a lot of hockey since the playoffs have started, they could use two or three days off, but that's a lot of rest. So I'll just throw that out there. In terms of the Sharks and Blues, I said before, I thought the series was going seven. I still feel that way. But let me just say one thing.
May 27th.
I don't.
Game one.
Okay. Okay. So that's another 10 days, give or take.
Yes, sir.
10-day layoff, right? All right. So I don't care between now and game seven if the San Jose Sharks get the worst call against them that cost them a game in modern sports history. I don't want to hear one peep. Now, I'm not saying this from a place of hate. I'm not, you know, I'm an Islander guy, although I was not happy what I saw the other night from a 30,000-foot perspective. The Sharks have gotten a lot of calls this postseason, from the Vegas series to the Colorado series to the St. Louis series. And what happened the other night was an abomination. How that can't be reviewed, I'm going to do a podcast alone on that. But having said all that, I think the series is really up for grabs. I think this is going to be – I really do think this is going to be game seven, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was an overtime situation. I really don't. I think it's an interesting contrast. St. Louis is obviously a really strong road team. I think it's a flip of a coin series. So it should. I'll be interested to see about. I haven't read anything about it. I didn't get a chance to read up on Erik Karlsson because clearly he didn't play the last number of minutes in Game 4, and then
right.
they strolled him out there under when they pulled the goalie. But you could tell, trying to read body language, he looked a little gingerly out there.
A
I don't know
bereft.
If something. Yeah, I don't know if something cropped up with him, but it will be interesting to see. I think you're going to get a good cup final either way. If you're going to get Bruins Blues or Bruins Sharks, it's going to be a good cup final. But I think we'll go in seven, and that next week is Memorial Day weekend. I believe we're going to do a 30-minute show previewing the cup final. So that will be the plans for next week.
Yep, and you know what?
Okay.
I want to see Logan Couture on a breakaway get tackled from behind and no penalty and no automatic goal rewarded. That's what, and I want to hear not one word out of anybody about it.
Yeah, they've gotten. I mean, look, I'm not trying to be, but like I said, I mean, we talked about the Vegas Game 7. You know, obviously, I don't think we talked about it a lot. Was the with all the different things going on, but Colorado, the offside
goal,
that took away a goal.
That's horrible.
And that's another thing that drives me nuts. And again, I know we're trying to wrap up the show. So you're telling me if someone is 1/1000th of a centimeter offside,
you couldn't even tell if he was on the blue line. I didn't see
any
definitive.
That could be reviewed. That could be reviewed. But a clear, that leads to a hand pass, that leads to a goal. I mean, they really have, they have to clean, the league after the season has to clean, the competition committee has to clean some of this stuff. Anytime a goal is involved, same thing with goalie interference where, oh, well, we called the penalty, so it can't be reviewed. Baloney. If a goal is involved, that other team should be allowed to have it reviewed, period, end of story. Just like
I'll tell you a story. A few years ago, Kings are in Detroit, and there's a deflection, and the puck goes up off the netting, comes back, hits Jonathan Quick in the back, goes in the goal. Referees lost sight of the puck, called it a good goal. And I want to say it was Justin Williams or Jarrett Stoll that was losing their mind pointing at the netting. It was out, and it was not reviewable. And that counted. I think that was the game Quick. He made 51 saves and lost the game 1-0 in Detroit. I'm not sure if it's that game, but that was 2014.
That's season, right?
Yeah, that's regular season. And they were going to the finals that year, and here's why the regular season matters. If Montreal had advanced into the Stanley Cup final, they would have held home ice over the Kings by 1 point. So they lose that game on an off the netting goal. They would have also lost home ice advantage in the Stanley Cup finals. As it was, I believe it was the Rangers that had beat Montreal in the Eastern Conference final, and the Kings held home
That's
ice
right.
and went on to win the Stanley Cup. But there was 1 point difference in whether that unreviewable goal would have meant home ice in the Stanley Cup finals. It needs to get fixed.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's like I said, if we're going to be reviewing offsides on a millimeter, then I'm sorry. And not to review these other things is ridiculous.
Here's the other thing that kills me. That player, Landeskog, at the time, is considered not on the ice. Because he's going for a change, and if he was considered to be on the ice playing the game, it would have been too many men on the ice penalty. So basically he's an invisible man out there. He's not relevant to the play, but he still counts as an offside. That it's ludicrous.
Yeah, they've gotten look, the old expression, you make your breaks, but they've gotten a lot of big breaks at big times. Huge breaks at big times, boy oh boy. But like I said, I think Game 5 is tomorrow, so it's gonna be interesting.
Go Blues!
Interesting game, and keep an eye on that Bruin layoff. I would be
it's a good
a
point.
Little concerned.
I mean,
there's nothing
you
can do about it, but and I'm not saying it's the end all be all, but it does have an effect.
You know, if you're dinged up a little bit, if a few extra days between rounds is a good thing.
Right.
But, I mean, basically Boston's on all cylinders right now, right? They don't have any major injuries going. That's when you start chomping at the bit. You get ants in the pants, and you want to get out there and play a little hockey. And no matter what, they're off till the 27th. So that's a good point you make.
All right, sounds good. So we'll talk to everyone next week. It'll be a short show, but a good one. And
Memorial Day.
Everyone
Memorial Day special, sir.
Yeah, and everyone pencil in June 15th for our big draft show. That's always a fun show.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Chris, we'll talk to you next week. This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. For Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone. We'll be right back.